Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Miller drops a shoulder, drives into the box. Liam Miller! From Miller to steal the day for North End!
Peony Pot.
Preston take the lead!
Preston North End have won the cup.
Preston North End may have won it!
The official Preston North End podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the official Preston North End podcast. This is PNE Pod. My name's Niall McCorn.
And I'm Neil Mellor. We'll be chatting to some PNE legends, some former teammates of mine, some famous PNE fans as well on the show.
And also some current first team PNE players. And that's exactly who we've got today. We've got Liam Miller, someone who comes from Canada and has had a really interesting background in the game.
Played in a World Cup, may play in another World Cup, and is certainly enjoying his spell at Preston North End.
Okay, well, let's get stuck into the story of how Liam Miller became a professional footballer on PNE Pod. How are you doing, Liam?
No, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. Excited to speak to you because there's not many Canadian football players in the English game. I suppose when you grow up in Canada, you're a bit strange for liking soccer. Whereas in England, if you don't like soccer, you're the weird one.
Yeah, a little bit of a weird story. My dad said when I was a kid, he tried to put me in ice hockey all the time. Like he tried to get me to skate and to do all that, but I just like wasn't interested in it. Like I just really hated it. Like every time I got on the ice, I would cry and complain and I would hate it. But my dad said once he put me on the football pitch, it was just like a different story. I just ran around like headless chicken, trying to get the ball off everybody, just like kicking, shooting, and just doing what every kid does, I guess. And I guess at that moment, my dad just thought that that's what I wanted to do. And then obviously it went from there, didn't it? So
give us an idea in Canada, because in England, everyone wants to play football. No one wants to ice skate. Is it different in Canada? Is it a case of everyone wanting to do the ice hockey rather than football?
Yeah, I would say like majority of the kids want to play ice hockey, but I feel like now it's a lot different. When I was a kid, it was probably like honestly the fifth or sixth sport in the country. Like I have to say, like it wasn't very popular at all. Like I couldn't name one player from our national team. I couldn't like no.
Did you call it football or soccer?
Soccer, yeah.
Soccer.
But like I couldn't name one person from the team and it was like really not important. So my dad obviously played a little bit when he was younger and my grandfather played a little bit as well. So it was kind of like a little bit in the family, but it wasn't like a serious sport. So it was actually quite hard to like break through and to like to do stuff. They just started like the Toronto FC Academy when I was 10, 11, 12. They like just started the age groups of doing it. They just like formed it. And that's like when it started to get a little bit more serious. But to be honest, now it's really good now, like because of our national team and how we've done. We went to the World Cup and we, you know, did all these things. It's really made like a big movement for like a lot of like Canadian young kids and like to look up to like people like Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David and stuff like that. So it's really
and
like
Liam Miller.
Yeah, hopefully. Like, hopefully yeah. But it's really comes leaps and bounds. I would say it's second or third sport now.
I'm trying to get my head around this. So as a young kid, we follow our team. We know the players. there must have been a team or a player that you watched as a young kid, maybe one that sticks out.
Yeah.
Maybe a game or a team.
Yeah.
Who was it when you were younger?
No, like, Neil, like, you won't like it, but, you know, I played for Liverpool, but I was a huge Man United fan growing up. Simply for one reason. It was just because in Canada at the time, there was only one team on TV, which was Man United, because they were the best team. And they didn't have much TV rights for games as a kid. And literally, Man United was on every week. The game I remember the most was Man City, Man United, when Rooney scored the bicycle kick. That's the game I remember the most as a kid. I remember me and my dad watching it on the TV and standing up in complete and utter shock. And we couldn't believe what we just saw when he scored that. So really, that's the only reason. It just, they didn't really have big soccer things back in the day. But now, obviously, it's completely different. They have DAZN, TSN, which is another one that does quite a few games and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Do you think that's why we're seeing a rise of popularity in the game in Canada, because there's just more exposure to it?
Yeah, but like, to be honest, like, I think it comes from like what we did in the national team, like, if I'm being a little bit selfish here maybe, but, you know, we really created like a thing there, you know, like before, you know, our generation kind of came to the national team, we were still kind of like a bang average national team, and that's nothing to do with the other guys before. There are probably still some very good players in there, but, you know, we really pushed the generation with our coach, John Herdman. We really pushed everything to make the country feel more soccer related. And we pushed and we pushed and we were beating teams in the first qualifiers 11-0 and 8-0 and like making things more exciting for people to want to watch us and all this stuff. And then, you know, we had games where we played the US in Toronto or in Canada. We haven't beat the US in so long. And we go out there and we beat the US 2-1. They come back again, beat them 2-0. And then it's like, so we're playing against Mexico. We're beating Mexico at home, drawing to Mexico in Azteca, where we haven't got a result in Azteca in like 30 years or something. We're like continually like making it like more entertaining and everything for all of us, for all the fans in Canada. And I think that kind of helped people want to watch soccer more. And then obviously they got more TV rights and all that kind of stuff from that.
But playing football as a young boy, what sort of leagues was that? I mean, grassroots in England, there's leagues everywhere. There's about four or five teams per club. I mean, how big was sort of playing football and the leagues as a young kid?
Yeah, like when you're a kid, like it's literally just grassroots. Like we call it Timbits because it's like a coffee.
You call it what?
Timbits. It's like Timbits. Yeah. So it's like a coffee place called Tim Hortons. I don't know. They have it here in the UK.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
And they have like these little donuts called Timbits. And they name like the kids' house league. It's called House League, but they name it after.
So it's not sponsored or anything.
No, it is, of course. Yeah.
Oh, it is sponsored.
Yeah, it is sponsored. Yeah.
But it's just
they call it Timbits, and it's like Timbit soccer. Like my daughter plays in there right now, which is kind of funny. But yeah, then you go Timbits, and then you go to Rep, which is like the better kids, but there's Rep A, B, and C. And then now I believe they have something called OYSL, which is like the best kids in the Rep age groups. And then after OYSL, you can play for like an academy team like Toronto or something. But when I was a kid, it was just Timbits, Rep, and then they just started OYSL as I moved on to England.
Did you want to be a footballer, or was it a case of thinking you enjoy playing football, but you know you've got to maybe get a different job?
Yeah, no, like when I was a kid, it was like I really just enjoyed it, and I didn't really think about it until I went to Toronto. I went to Toronto as a young kid, and I had a tryout there, and I felt like I was doing quite well. But when I was a kid, it took me a while to like hit puberty and like to mature. So I was quite small and like quite fragile, really, again, pushed off the ball a lot. And in Canada at the time, it was really like based off like physical appearance. Like that's what they kind of wanted, like presences and stuff. And they released me at 12 or 11 or something. They cut me from TFC. And, you know, I remember the drive home crying with my dad, like, oh, like all I want to do is play soccer and blah, 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 blah. And my dad was like, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Like everything happens for a reason. Obviously, I got a chance to come over here, and I just was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to make that decision, and I'm going to try my best and go for it. And you know what? Worst case, if I don't go for it, I can always move back. So it's just, I might as well take that chance. And if nothing happens from it, just move back to Canada.
How did you get that chance?
So my dad used to coach like the 1997s, like boys team, like the club I used to play for, which was North Mississauga. He was like one of the better teams in Canada, or in Ontario at least. And he went across to the Keel Cup in Stoke, like a tournament in Stoke.
Keel Cup. This is like the most famous young tournament every team in England's played at.
Yeah.
All the top teams are there.
Yeah. So he played there with his team. His team was really good. And they actually, I think, finished second, I think, in the tournament or whatever. But anyways, my dad was registering his team for the tournament. And my dad walked in, and this team from New York was like saying to like the registration desk, like, well, we don't have any players, like our players all became sick or something, blah, 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 blah. And I was there with them, and And he was like, well, my son is here. Like, how old is your team? And they go 99. And my dad was like, oh, my son's a 99. Like, he just got released from Toronto FC. Like, he's a decent player. Like, if you need someone, like, he's there, you know, he can play. And they were like, yeah, sure, like, we need the players. So they just like brought me on to a random team from New York. So, and then I get into the team and I scored like 13 goals in four games or something stupid. I don't remember what it was, but it was like unreal. And I was like on fire and I was playing so well. I had like the whole like Stoke team on the side, like go number eight and all that. And, like, I felt like the king of the world, you know? And then I had some opportunities for a trial from Stoke, West Brom and Fulham. And obviously I didn't know nothing about like the football pyramid or like anything. Cause obviously from Canada, again, I didn't know nothing. I didn't know like which team was the best, like academy developers. I had no idea. So I just looked at the Premier League table and at the time Fulham was the highest. So I was like, let's just go to Fulham, I guess. So I went to Fulham and to be fair to them, they have a very good development system there and it worked out very well. So
I guess it's helpful when you've got a dad like you do, who's got experience in the game. I think your dad was a youth team player at Charlton.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Which is a club you ended up playing for on loan, incidentally. How helpful or influential has he been?
Yeah, you know, without my dad, I don't think I could be, you know, where I am today. You know, he sacrificed his whole life for me, really. It's hard to put into words sometimes when your parents can do stuff like that for you. So yeah, you know, he moved his whole life for me over to England. You know, he did have a job that was very not easy to get everywhere, but he's an electrician, so he, you know, everywhere needs electricians, so he could get a job here. But he left my mom and my brothers and my sisters and everything to make sure that I had everything possible to succeed here. So, you know, sometimes I complain about him for being a little bit too passionate, but I understand why he's so passionate about it. And
because you didn't want to go originally, right?
No, I didn't know. Like to be honest with you, like, you know, the 11 or 12, 13 year old boy in me was like, no, like I don't want to go. I don't want to leave my mom, my brother, my sister. Like, you know, I had a really good friend, Mike. You know, my wife was also my really good friend at the time. And like, I didn't want to leave them, like, you know, because when you're 13, your most important thing is your friends and there's nothing really more important, right? So I was like, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And my dad was like, Liam, like, you're going, like, you know, and, you know, he made that decision for me because I wasn't at the age where I could make that decision. And like I said, it was the best decision he ever made, best decision I ever made getting on that plane. And you know, it changed my whole life drastically. And I think it also changed his life as well because he loves it over here now. You know, he could have moved back at any time and he still lives in the area and he just lives his life and films and all that. So
that is quite cool to have parents that work in the film and TV industry. When you can say that your parents have worked on things like Peaky Blinders and Game of Thrones and stuff like that. So yeah. Tell us about that. What's it like having parents that work in the film industry?
Yeah, it's long hours. You know, like when I was a kid, my mom used to work a lot. Same with my dad, to be honest. My mom has done like also really high things as well, like high caliber things as well.
Come on, like what? Like,
so she's done Dune. She did Suicide Squad, Resident Evil, Pixels, Hairspray. Like all that stuff. Then my dad did Peaky Blinders, Game of Thrones, X-Men my dad did when he was younger.
Have you ever been asked to be an extra in any of them?
Like, I think my dad said I probably could have if I wanted to, but I was like, it's not for me. You
know? I'd rather that than my mum test the makeup on me every day.
But yeah, no, like I went to the set a couple of times. I think I met Jackie Chan when I was a kid. My mom did a movie with Jackie Chan. Now, like, it is cool, to be honest. Like, you get to see, like, my mom's name on the credits and my dad's name on the credits. You know, my mom's been nominated for, like, quite a lot of Emmys or something. I don't know, but she's been nominated quite a few times. And like her movies have won awards and all that kind of stuff for like different things. So yeah, it's quite cool.
P&E Pod, the official Preston North End podcast. P&E Pod, subscribe to the podcast now and never miss an episode.
You're from Brampton, mm-hmm. And I was looking at Brampton and I was quite shocked to see how many athletes come from the area. Why do you think that is? Is there any reason why your hometown is producing all of these talents?
To be honest, I have no idea. Everybody always asks what do they put in the water in Brampton? Because for some reason, everyone who comes out of Brampton is like always ends up doing something. So it's quite strange, to be honest. But to be honest, like, I think it's just because it's not like the nicest area in the world, to be honest with you. Like, it's not where I was from, and Brampton wasn't the roughest part. Don't get me wrong. Like, it was still like quite decent. But it's not like the nicest area. So I think a lot of people have to grind and get out of it like that, you know, and sometimes that's, you know, like the only option is sports and all that kind of stuff. Cause you know, I had a lot of friends who lived in Brampton who now are, you know, not in a good way. And a lot of kids find sports as a way out and stuff like that. So I think that's what they did. Like, again, like I said, for me, it wasn't really like that. You know, I lived in a decent part of the of Brampton, so it was different, but.
Who were some of the names from Brampton that people might know?
So it's myself, Junior Hoylett, Daniil Henry used to play for West Ham, Atiba Hutchinson, who played for Besiktas for a long time. Who else is from there? Kyle Laren, who plays for Mallorca in La Liga. And there's a lot, there's probably a lot more that I can think of, but yeah, there's like, honestly, from the national team, there has to be 8 or 9 players who are from Brampton. Oh, actually there's one more, Tejan Buchanan. He's also from Brampton. He plays for Inter Milan now.
You came on for him in the World Cup, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And like, luckily, cause you got cramped. So I got the chance to get a run around. So, it was really only me and Tejan who are like from like the same age group. And to be honest with you, like, I don't even like remember Tejan that much. Like, you know, like we've talked about it. Like I do remember him like bits and pieces, but I don't remember him being like unbelievable or whatnot. Like, you remember him like from seeing him, you know, but he came out and he's done unbelievable with like what he's done. He went to college and then now he plays for Inter Milan. So it's been unbelievable.
I know we're talking about your hometown and Canada, but when you've arrived at Fulham, are you thinking you're going to be a professional football player? How different is it? How difficult is it? What sort of players are around you? I think, are you mates with Sessegnon, who's maybe made it as well? So so he's a familiar name who we've seen, but are you standing out at that time at Fulham?
Yeah. So like, I'll tell you, so my first training session, I scored an absolute wonderful volley from like 30 yards out top corner. And I remember like all the lads being like, who the hell is this kid? I remember them telling me it. Scored an amazing goal. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it really, to be honest. But out of my 6-week trial, they signed me in 3 weeks. And you know, I was training really well. When I first got there, I was playing up with the older lads and all that kind of stuff. So like I did really well. But it was like after that period of training with the older lads for a little bit where I started to really struggle. Sometimes you get that like new club, new area feeling where like you kind of like feel like unstoppable a little bit because like you're kind of like in that zone of like just full focus mode all the time. But then obviously like as a kid, I couldn't like keep that going like sustainably for so long. So after like 4 or 5 months, I found myself back with my own age. And I was struggling to play and they kept moving me around different positions, striker, left wing. I was playing number 6 at one point. Yeah, which is unbelievable CDM. To think of. Yeah, which is unbelievable to think about now. But they can move me around everywhere. And like, we couldn't really find like my best position. It took me like 2 years to like really like adapt to like the physicality and like the pace and like everything like that. And then eventually, you know, Kevin Betsy was my coach and he put me on the left wing. And I just like became a different animal, in my opinion. Like when I started playing there, I just like became so much more direct like I am now. And just like things that I didn't have when I'm playing in those other positions. So that's kind of like where it kind of all started. And I still shifted from like left wing to striker. And like I did at Liverpool, like kind of just played across the whole front three. But yeah, no, it was really difficult at the time to like really like adjust. But once I did adjust, I found it like quite easy. But once I adjusted, you know.
3 years at Fulham and then Liverpool come in for you.
Yeah. So like I said, I struggled for a little bit. Then 15, 16 is when I started to do better. 16, I did really well in that year. I scored a lot of goals in that year and I was playing really well. And at the time, I had Tottenham and a couple other clubs like interested in signing me. And to be honest, I was dead set going to Tottenham. Like I was sure I was going to go. I spoke to my parents. The only thing I didn't like is that like they wanted me to move into a digs and my parents had to like, they could live around the corner, but they couldn't live with me. And like I said, cause I was there with my dad for so long, I kind of wanted to stay with my dad and all that kind of stuff. But that's like how they did it there, which is whatever, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Right. I was dead set. And then we played a friendly game against Liverpool for some reason. I've literally never played against Liverpool the whole time I was at Fulham. And we played a friendly game against Liverpool and I scored and Cuive was in goal and I played well in the game. And then after my, you know, I was 16, so I had an agent at the time. My agent was like, oh, like Liverpool are interested in you. And I was like, really? Oh, okay. Like let's go have a look. Like, you know, like we'll go have a look at the training ground and whatnot. I just got like a completely different vibe from what I got for everywhere else. You know, like I went to Liverpool and I felt like an extremely family oriented club. I had like a good feeling about it. So I said to my agent and my dad, I was like, I think I want to go to Liverpool, you know? And well, you can't really turn down Liverpool when they come in for you. So I signed my professional contract at 17. Jurgen happened to be in the building, so he got a little picture of me and spoke with me a little bit, which was nice.
What did he say?
I hope to see you in the first team and all that kind of stuff.
You've arrived at Liverpool, and maybe what a lot of people might not realise is Stephen Gerrard was your coach, wasn't he, at under-18s. Now, Stephen Gerrard is one of the greatest players to play in the Premier League for Liverpool, for England. What was he like as a coach?
Like I said, in Canada at the time, there was only Man United on. But, you know, when Liverpool played against Man United, I used to love watching him. You know, and I used to absolutely, like, be in awe watching him play. And when he became our coach, like, honestly, at first I was so nervous, like, because, like, honestly, like, how good he was. And you just look at him and you just see this Premier League legend as your coach, you know. And I was so nervous at the time when he first came in, but then, like, I got to know him and to, like, do all that, and he's such an amazing person. Like, honestly, like, I think personally, like, he really helped me a lot. Like, he really taught me things that I needed to know. Like I didn't deal with, like, being on the bench well, and, like, I used to, like, get really angry about it. And I came in with Steven, and, you know, Steven, every time I was on the bench or whatnot, he used to, like, pull me and go, Liam, like, you know, this is why you're on the bench today. And he would tell me, like, clear as day. So if I was playing bad, Liam, you're playing bad. That's why you're on the bench today. Liam, I need to give you a rest. That's why you're on the bench today. Liam, I need to do this, and this. And he was so clear with the way he spoke. And it gave me such, like, clarity to, like, learn to, like, be okay with, like, being on the bench and being, like, maybe not playing all the time. And for me, that, like, took me leaps and bounds. But even as a coach, he was great. You know, we played similar to what we play at Preston at the beginning of the season, this box in midfield. And I was, like, the lone striker with Curtis and Rafa Camacho really behind me. And we honestly played really well. We won the majority of our games, and we were a good team.
You referenced Curtis there, who's Curtis Jones. You mm-hmm. also played with Harvey Elliott. You obviously didn't quite get the run in the Liverpool first team that maybe you would have wanted, but some of the players that were in your position were some of the best in the world and still are. Do you ever look at those players like Harvey and like Curtis and think what might have been if you had stayed at Liverpool a little bit longer? Or did you feel like when you did eventually move on, that was the right time?
I thought it was the right time for me to move on there. You know, I was around for a long time, and, you know, this is my opinion, Neil, but I always thought I was one of the better ones in our age group. I didn't think I was too far off it. You know, I think I should have had a couple more chances, you know, training with the first team and not playing, because obviously it's hard, but I think I could have trained there a couple more times. And
it was different sites back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
so
different.
So back then it was Melwood, and now they've joined.
Yeah, like, it was different for sure, but I still thought I could have had a little bit more opportunity, in my own opinion. But, you know, when Basel came in for me, it was just kind of one of those things where I felt like I personally tried my best at the time. And I was like, okay, you know, they still have unbelievable players on the wings there. Am I ever realistically going to play here? Probably not. And Basel was a big club at the time, fighting for Champions League spots. And I was like, I could go and play Champions League here and really make a name for myself. So I was like, all right, like, I'm gonna take this opportunity, you know?
Before you did, you had a couple of loan spells now. Did you feel though you didn't want to go out on loan? Because I remember one of my loan spells when I was sent out to West Ham, I was like, I don't want to leave. I don't think I should be leaving. But for you went to Kilmarnock, first of all. Steve Clark, who's a national manager of Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, he did great things that season, your first season at Kilmarnock.
Yeah, so I went on three loans. So twice at Kilmarnock and one at Charlton. But the first one was with Steve Clark and Kilmarnock. And honestly, like I was saying to you before, like that season with Steven prepared me for that, because I didn't play when I went there. I came off the bench every game. I started one game the whole time that I was there, and that was Celtic away. And I started it. And honestly, that was my best game of the season, Celtic away. But
what score did you get beat?
I can't remember.
Did you get beat?
Yeah, we got beat. Yeah. But no, it was my best game of the season for sure. But the thing with Steve Clark is that, like, again, he was very, like, talkative to me, you know, because as a young kid, I needed that. I needed, like, reassurance, and I needed, like, all that as a kid. Like, now I probably don't need that anymore, but back then I needed it. And he, you know, he used to always talk to me, Liam, you're doing great. You're doing great. Don't worry about it. Just keep going. You're doing great and all that. And I did really, really well, in my opinion. Every time I came on, I was dangerous and I did well and I scored my first goal there, St. Marin. Had a little knee slide, unbelievable feeling. And it was actually last minute, I think, as well. So it was like,
it was probably raining.
So. It was raining. Yeah. No, but it was an unbelievable moment, like first goal and that.
How were you treated as a loan player? Because there were some big characters in that dressing room.
Yeah.
The likes of Chris Boyd and people like that. So as a young lad on loan from Liverpool, how were you treated by the senior,
like,
players?
I think the first time I was there, I was treated really well. Like the players really took me in well and like helped me try to improve and all that. The second time I was there wasn't the same, but that was on me. That was my fault. I came back there the second year and I came back with the promises that I was going to play, and they gave me like the number 11 shirt, and I thought I was too ready for it, you know? And like, you know, sometimes I was young and stupid, and I wouldn't work as hard or whatnot because, you know, from Liverpool and all that, you know, and whatnot. So like, I learned that the hard way, you know, for sure, because I didn't take that second loan the way I should have.
Did you get a bit of stick off some?
I did, yeah. You know, like, you know, I got a bit of stick from the older lads, you know, especially the ones who were there with me last year. Yeah, like again, but like it's all a part of the experience, you know, because, you know, like you live and you learn. Like I thought at the time that like I was going to be like their best player and I could do what I want and it didn't matter. But in reality, that wasn't the truth. And I really struggled that year. I really didn't play well. It was probably my worst year in football because I wasn't in the right headspace. But again, like I said, it's all about learning. So I took that and I learned from that, and that would never happen again.
You ended up moving on to Basel. And as someone who made a jump from Canada to England, was it equally a big jump to go from England to Switzerland, where you're speaking a different language, where the style of football is different? Because I read that maybe it took you a little bit longer to adapt over in Switzerland than you would have wanted.
Yeah, it was harder, I think. Because like I said, I came to England with my dad and same language, and I went to school and I had made friends. But when I went to Switzerland, it was different language. Like the teammates spoke English, but you know, at the time I had my wife and my daughter, and they didn't come over for a while because they couldn't, you know, because I didn't have a house, and it was like a difficult situation because they have all these rules.
And your daughter was quite young, right?
Yeah, she was. Yeah. So like, yeah. I actually ended up missing my daughter's first birthday, which was terrible because it was hard for me at the time because I've obviously she was just born and I didn't want to miss her first birthday. But I had to, because it wasn't fair to her to put her in the hotel. And now, you know, she's a little kid. She can't be sitting in a hotel room. Like, you know what I mean? So she was in Canada with my wife and her family. So yeah, it was harder like to get things done. Like people didn't speak English. So I had to have like the player welfare manager, like come around with me everywhere and translate for me and like all this stuff. And it was just like a really hard transition to like do it. But once I got settled in and everything, it was good, you know, I had a really good first season there in Basel, and it was really strange, actually. I'll tell you the story. So I was in, my first day there, right? And I didn't know anyone, like no one was from North America, no one was from England, no one spoke like great English, right? So I was just in there and I got my breakfast and I sat down at a random table. 15 minutes later, late as always, all the Latinos come in, and they all come in and I'm sitting at their table and they're all looking at me like, who the hell is this guy sitting at our table, you know? And they all just come sit around like around me, you know, and I'm sitting in Artur Cabral's seat, who plays for Benfica now, and he was the king of Basel, okay?
And you sat in his seat.
And I sat in a seat, right? So, and he was the king, right? And he's looking at me like, why are you in my seat? But he can't speak English at the time, right? So he's just looking at me like this, and he sits beside me. So then there was one guy named Jordi Quintilla, who plays still in the Swiss league, but he spoke perfect English, like amazing, because he played for Sporting Kansas City in the MLS. And he was like speaking to me and translating everything for me. And I just became friends with all the Latinos who came there. And then we got a couple more.
So you weren't told to move. You stayed there.
Yeah, stayed there. And then they all became like my super close friends. And like a couple more Portuguese guys came, and probably my best friend in football came there. His name's Thomas Tavares. He plays for Spartak Moscow now. But me and him had like an unbelievable like connection. Like we were like honestly my best friend in football. Like, and we just kind of like all played in the same team, but we all like had like this connection of like friendship, and we all would go out every like for dinner and stuff like every night and like all this stuff, like typical like Spanish culture, you know? And it was like unbelievable and amazing. And it really helped me like off the pitch to like forget about like the language and all that stuff, because I had such a like a close group. But then the second year they all left. It was just like completely different atmosphere and vibe, and like it made me like realize the more how hard it was off the pitch with like, you know what I mean? So yeah, it was harder for sure.
P&E Pod. Check the back catalogue for more great Preston North End interviews and guests. P&E Pod. From legends to leaders. The best guests from inside Deepdale.
You said not long ago that you missed out on one of the Canada squads at Basel, and that changed your mentality. What was it about that moment that made you think differently?
Every camp for Canada at that time, from when I was 17 years old, I was called up for the national team. I was never not once called up, and I didn't play every time.
So you were playing under 18s for Liverpool, and you'd be called up for the Canada national team. Yeah. Not even under 18s, Canada.
No, the first team. Yeah. Because that, again, like at the time, not saying that was the standard, but my coach John wanted to bring in the next generation of players. So he brought me in, he brought everybody in. Jonathan David as well was a Genk in 21s, I think. And he brought Johnny in. So he brought like a lot of us in who weren't like necessarily playing regular first team minutes. But anyways, so I never got not been called up for a camp. And I went to Basel and I was speaking to the captain there, who's a legend, Valentin Stocker at Basel. And I was telling him like, hey, Valley, like I'm not playing much here. Like you think I'm gonna go national team? He's like, yeah, you went national team when you're playing for like Liverpool 18s. Of course you're going to go. So then I kind of like forgot about it. You know, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to go. Don't worry about it. And then I get the thing and it's like, standby. Oh, no. Like really? And like my heart sank, you know, like deep in my belly, right? And it was like that realization of like, okay, I'm not doing enough. Like I got to do more. Like there's no way I'm not getting called in for the national team.
Did the coach not ring you up to tell you this or not?
Yeah, he did. Like but it was after, you know, like he called me after I got the thing, like, cause he sent it and I saw it. Then he called me like 20 minutes later.
I guess you felt like maybe you were taking it for granted.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You know, because I was like thinking, oh, I'm going to go every time. It doesn't matter, whatever. I just got to keep like just training and then I'll go and then, you know, I'll be a part of it, whatever. But that like, that wasn't the case. And I really like had to like take that in to realize, okay, I got to like kick it up here. Like and you know, I did a lot of extras at Liverpool and a lot of stuff to like get better then. But then I was like, okay, but I got to add this into the men's game now, because it's not just because I've made it now, I can just like stop doing all that, which I thought I could, but I couldn't. Right. So then I was like, okay, like I got to do more. I got to do more in the gym. I got to do more extras. I got to like make sure that I'm ready again. So I worked really hard, and then I had a really good season in Basel after that, because I really put my head down and I worked as hard as I possibly could for that to happen.
So were you worried about not getting in the World Cup squad?
Yeah, that was hard for me because I wasn't playing well at Basel at the time, you know, because a lot of things off the field was not going well. And it was really hard for me to
so an unsettled environment.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Because like the first three coaches I had there at Basel thought I was a very good player and they all trusted in me and they played me very often. And then, you know, I had other coaches who didn't think I was so good and they thought other players were better than me. And then I was like in and out all the time. So I was like really, really nervous for the World Cup, because I was like, this is the biggest thing for me, like biggest thing in my career so far is this World Cup. And I really just want to go and whatnot. And I got the call from my coach telling me that he was going to select me. And he literally just said to me, like, I'm going to select you because I know how good you can be, but also because for what you've done for the group, you know, you've been involved basically the whole time. And I think I owe it to you at least to put you in the squad, you know, at least, you know. And I was like, okay, thank you. Like I was like crying. I was like, thank God, you know. And then the next day I actually had a game for Basel, and I played so well because I felt so like free, you know. I was like, oh, I don't have to stress anymore. So yeah. And then obviously the World Cup came, and yeah, I got on because Tejan got a cramp, but I wouldn't take it any other way. So got on the field at a World Cup, you know, how many players in their career can say they played at a World Cup?
Last 10 minutes, Belgium, first group
exactly.
Game.
Yeah. And the next World Cup is in Toronto, Canada. Yeah. Incentive.
Exactly. So yeah, it was just like an unreal experience for me. You know, I got to play against, you know, Kevin De Bruyne. And
did you get anyone's shirt at the end of the game, or did you keep your own? What did you do?
No, I kept my own. Like I was going to swap it. I was going to ask someone to swap it. But then I thought to myself, like, you know what, like, this is the first game I ever played at a World Cup. I want to keep my shirt, you know, I don't want to give it away. So I kept that one. I've tried to get others from other players, like from Croatia and from Morocco, but they were all taken. Like everyone just grabbed them. So
who did you want? Modric.
I wanted Modric.
Big list for him.
But you know what? I actually wanted Kovacic, you know, because he really impressed me in the game. Like he was really, really good. You just bully everybody, get the ball, drive, power. Like I really thought he was really good.
What was the score? 4-1 to Croatia?
I think so, yeah. Because we scored in the first minute, right? Yeah. So like imagine for us, like we had that game in against Belgium where we lost 1-0, but we dominated the game. You know, we should have scored. Yeah, Alfonso missed a penalty. And you know, Johnny could have scored a couple chances. Like we had loads of chances in the game. We should have won like 4-1, to be honest. We should have. and we didn't. And then, you know, we looked at the stats after the game and we had like a 3-something XG and we should have won the game and it was blah, 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 all this stuff. So we thought we were like,
oh God, do you look at them stats? XG? Do you look at XG?
To be honest, sometimes, yeah. Like not overly like all the time, but like I do understand it and like I do get it. So like, and I do think it's somewhat important. It's not everything, but it is somewhat important. You know what I mean? So I do just look at it. Yeah, so we thought we were like in this amazing place and stuff like that. And then the first minute of Croatia, we score and everyone's like, okay, we're here. Like, okay, we're ready. Like, we're going to like compete here. And then Croatia just teach us a lesson, man. Like they destroy us. Like, and it was crazy because
were you happy just to sit on the bench and I don't want to get out.
I still wanted to go on. I was like, honestly, I felt like in every game of the World Cup, I could have done something, honestly, because I wasn't playing well in Basel, but like I felt like a different mindset for me when I was at the World Cup again. I was so focused again, like laser focused. And I felt like I could have done anything like when I played. And even against Belgium, I thought I did all right. I took a terrible corner, which my friends still make fun of me about all the time. But I still felt like I did all right, especially against like top players there. Two of people from our group made it in the semifinals, right? So we didn't do what we should have done in the World Cup.
Group of death.
Now we shouldn't have done what we should have done. But if you look back at our group, we had two semifinalists in our group. So it's like, yeah, we could have done more, but we had a hard group, man.
Let's bring things back into the present then. You're back in your second home of the UK on loan at PNE. You've said in the past that you felt that maybe you didn't quite get the chance to test yourself at Premier League and Championship level. Feel like you're doing that now?
Yeah, I feel like I am. I feel like I've taken the opportunity to come back here and I really started to show more of what I wanted to show to everybody. And that was my whole goal, was just to come back and to like, you know, just get a little taste of English football, because this is where I want to play. You know, I want to play in the Premier League. The Championship's a great way to get there, and that's why I wanted to do it.
Tell us who you've turned down to sign for PNA.
I don't know if I can.
Blackpool one, definitely.
Yeah, Blackpool one.
Yeah, Burnley. Didn't want to go there, right? Blackburn, no chance.
Yeah, I don't know. No, like, listen, I had
must have been options. There must have been a few people sniffing about.
No, I did. Like, I had a couple.
You don't want to tell us, do you?
No, I don't. No. But like, I did have a couple in the summer. But, you know, I chose PNA. I chose Ryan as plan and stuff that he spoke to me. You know, I spoke to him in the past. You know, like, we had a meeting and stuff, and I spoke to him about, you know, like what his plans are, where everything was going to go and how everything was going to be. And to be honest, it was also close to my dad and stuff. So that also was a big, big indicator. Cause like I said, off the pitch in Basel was really tough for me. So I wanted to be somewhere close to my dad again, you know.
Had you ever played against Preston? Had you ever been to Deepdale before you signed?
No. I don't think so. I can't remember. I honestly don't think I've ever played against Preston. But like, honestly, like when I got to Deepdale, it honestly really surprised me, because it was really nice. Like, and this is nothing to like.
Well, what were you expecting?
No, it's nothing. No, but like I walked in, right? And I was like, this stadium's unreal. When I walked out for my first game against Plymouth, normally, like, cause I haven't been there before, cause I sat on deadline day. So I didn't get to go to Deepdale, like to look at it before. So it was my first time at Deepdale when I walked in for the Plymouth game. And I'm honestly like never really nervous for games, right? Like never really. Like I'm kind of just like, I try my best like to not think about the game, because like I try to just like let my instincts take over and I just play. But I was super nervous about the game. And I normally go out and I walk like on the field, just like look at it, you know, before the game. But I was like to myself, nah, I can't do that today. Like I just got to focus. Like I'm not like, I'm quite nervous. So I didn't go look at it. So the first time I went to go, actually I saw Deepdale's pitch, was when I was going out to warm up for Plymouth. And as soon as I like walked on, I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm ready. You know, like I can do it. And then I played really well. So it worked out.
A winning start and a goal.
Winning start and a goal. And technically an assist, but not really.
So just finally then, Liam, how much are you enjoying being at PNE?
Honestly, so much. Like I said, my family's so close to me. It makes the world of a difference just to like have that off the pitch things. And, you know, I'm really happy where I'm living, you know, a lot of stuff around, that keeps me happy. But especially like the lads in the change room and that, they're all great. You know, like I was speaking to Ben Whiteman the other day about it. Like, you know, sometimes you go into dressing rooms and that, and you can speak to some people, not all of them, but I felt like as soon as I went in there, I could speak to all of yous, and like, it wasn't like, big cliques or anything. Like you're all good friends and you're all together and all this kind of stuff. And I don't struggle speaking to any of you. So it was really, really enjoyable. has been really, really enjoyable, like being here and, you know, being with the lads, and also, you know, we're doing well. So let's hopefully keep that going.
P&E Pod, the official P&E podcast. Make sure you are subscribed now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sports Social Podcast Network.